Hello everyone and welcome to CRAMSurg, Clinical Research Appraisal and Methodology for Surgical Trainees, where we pick a paper fresh from the press on a hot general surgical topic. We review it for you, we present it for you, we critique its methodology for you, and provide top-of-the-field expert opinions and teaching on research appraisal and methodology. My name is Gio Perrin, and together with Professor Sabobala Subramanian, Adam Haig, Ben Wood and Josh Lau, we bring you CRAMSurg from the wonderful region of the Yorkshire and the Humber. Welcome back, everyone. Tonight we are going to have a look at a paper that was recently out in JAMA Surgery, entitled 60-Day Mortality of Patient with Metastatic Colorectal Cancer, Randomized to Systemic Treatment versus Primary Tumor Resection, followed by Systemic Treatment, which is part of the CAIRO 4 Phase 3 randomized clinical trial. This is a slightly shorter session, as the teaching session will be used as part of a blog episode entitled An Introduction to Evidence-Based Medicine and Why is it Important. So stay tuned so you can catch up with that at some point when we get it out for you. I'll leave you to it.
Great. So, I'm Felix. I'm a junior clinical fellow in general surgery at Huddersfield, just to introduce myself. Tonight, me and Gio will be talking about this paper, which entitled 60-Day Mortality of Patients with Metastatic Colorectal Cancer who are randomized to systemic treatment versus primary tumor resection followed by systemic treatment. This is published as part of a wider trial called the CAIRO 4 clinical trial, and it's run by the Dutch Colorectal Cancer and Danish Colorectal Cancer groups, which comprises of the authors you can see there, and it was published a couple of weeks ago in this journal, JAMA Surgery, and the PubMed information is just there as well.
Right, so a little bit of background about the topic. Now, the management of colorectal cancer in patients with unresectable metastatic disease but virtually no symptoms or minimal symptoms from the primary tumor is a debated subject. As things are standing, and as far as I know, there is no guideline recommending primary resection as part of the treatment in patients that are otherwise not curable, with the caveat that there is not too much evidence to support this, but the feeling that the burden of morbidity that we would be adding to these patients probably doesn't justify the operation itself. And interestingly, a trial that ran pretty much in parallel to the CAIRO 4, the IPAC trial, actually explored very similar patient population and was stopped early because of futility of the surgical intervention. So in this context, rather than exploring sort of the role of surgery itself, the authors somehow asked themselves if there is a subgroup of patients that will potentially benefit from surgical treatment. Ball back to Felix to talk a little bit more about the aims.
Yeah, so the overall question they're asking is there a difference in 60-day mortality between systemic treatment only versus primary tumor resection followed by systemic treatment in patients with metastatic colorectal cancer who are being treated with palliative intent? So to put that into a PICO format, the patients have to be 18 years or older with a WHO performance status between 0 and 2, with a histologically confirmed radiologically resectable colorectal cancer with unresectable metastases and no severe signs or symptoms from the primary tumor. The intervention is primary tumor resection, which must be performed within 4 weeks of randomization, which is then followed by systemic treatment with bevacizumab and a fluoropyrimidine-based chemotherapy. The comparison is patients who only receive the systemic treatment, same systemic treatment, which must commence within 4 weeks of randomization. And the outcome they are measuring in this paper is 60-day mortality. There are some further secondary outcomes, which we'll come on to shortly. Gio, if you want to talk about the methods.
Yeah, sure. So as mentioned earlier on, this is an international multicenter randomized phase 3 trial. 45 centers were involved in total between Denmark and Netherlands. It ran for a very long time, from July 2012 to January 2021. So this is pretty much a 10-year span. Patients are randomized in a one-to-one fashion to two groups, and there's no blocks. No blinding is attempted at any level. So surgeons, oncologists, patients, and assessors are all not blinded to the intervention. The authors do use minimization to kind of obtain homogeneous group in terms of number of metastatic sites, serum LDH, WHO performance status, institutions where the patients are treated, and location of the primary tumor. The two groups, as Felix mentioned already, are systemic treatment only with chemotherapy or primary tumor resection followed by systemic treatment. So the outcomes that the authors report about in this paper are not the outcomes that were originally described as the main outcomes of the CAIRO 4 study. So the authors focused on 60-day mortality, and as a secondary outcome, they look at association between patient biochemical characteristics and 60-day mortality within each treatment arm. So basically trying to identify patients that are more likely or less likely to die based on patient or biochemical characteristics themselves. And they also aim at comparing adverse events, which are sort of standardized in their recording, between the two treatment arms within 16 days of randomization. Now, if we have to be a bit more exact, we would say that all of these are secondary outcomes. They were actually not planned as outcomes in the original study design. So the authors do not provide any sampling calculations, any sample size calculations, because the study is not designed specifically to look at this. And we can talk about it later in more details. Ball back to you, Felix.
Yeah, so they recruited 198 patients who were randomized into two arms, as we've described, 99 patients in each. To start with the systemic treatment arm, they included 99 of these patients in the intention to treat analysis. Three of the patients then became excluded because they needed emergency resection. Emergency resection, although it's interesting to note that this was left up to the discretion of the treating center. And as we mentioned before, they included 45 centers in the study. And then they mentioned in the paper that six patients in this arm underwent primary tumor resection owing to symptoms. So we can therefore only presume that three patients had both the systemic therapy and the primary tumor resection, but it's not something that they really elaborated on in the write-up. 96 of the 99 patients received their systemic therapy within 60 days as planned. In the primary tumor resection arm, there were again 99 patients. Two were excluded immediately. One had no evidence of metastatic disease at initial laparoscopy, and one was never actually consented to be a part of the study, and then they effectively withdrew consent immediately, so they were excluded. So 97 included in the intention to treat analysis. Of those, then seven were excluded for various reasons, which you can see there. When we were reading through, we couldn't quite work out what is the difference between patients refusing to undergo surgery once they've been included in the intention to treat population or before. And we felt that they might have excluded these patients for essentially withdrawing their consent. 66 of the 97 patients, so 68%, received their systemic therapy within 60 days, and 68 had laparoscopic procedures. These tables demonstrate the characteristics. The salient points are on the left-hand side. In the primary tumor resection arm, there was a male predominance in the study, and this is important, as the authors mentioned later on, that they have reviewed a pooled analysis of 26 randomized controlled trials, which have shown men to have a worse prognosis as compared to women, although they do state that this is a small difference. The rest of the characteristics and parameters are well matched for patient characteristics. And on the right there, you can see the different procedures in the primary tumor resection arm, which patients underwent. And important to note, quite high stoma formation rate, which I think Gio will mention again later on
Right, yes. Yeah. So as you can see on the graph on the left side, there is a clear difference between the two groups in terms of 60-day mortality. 3% in the systemic therapy group, 11% in the surgery followed by systemic therapy group. And this results in a statistically significant p-value of 0.03. On the right side, you can see why the patients that died died in each group. So in the systemic therapy group, you can see that they either died because of progression of disease or toxicity related to treatment or a complication related to the primary tumor, such as a chronic perforation. In the surgery first group, you can see that only one case was actually directly linked as a surgical complication. Four patients had rapid disease progression after surgery, two died even before having surgery, and four died after starting systemic therapy, either as a result of toxicity from the therapy itself, or for sepsis, or for a known cause. That sepsis was not neutropenic, therefore was not put down as a complication of chemotherapy. Ball to you, Felix.
So in the secondary outcomes, no patient characteristics were found to be statistically significant for increased 60-day mortality within either arm. That's patient non-biochemical characteristics. In the systemic treatment arm, serum albumin was found to be significant predictor for mortality with a p-value of 0.04. And in the primary tumor resection arm, LDH, AST, ALT, and neutrophils were all found to be statistically significant predictor of 60-day mortality. They also noted that these parameters, when combined, increased the risk of mortality. As Gio mentioned a bit earlier, there is no mention in any of the secondary outcomes about quality of life, surgical morbidity, or progression-free survival, which did make up part of the initial protocol when it was published in 2014. And then the other secondary outcome was adverse events, of which none were found to be statistically significant. So in terms of the limitations that they reported themselves, they noted the small sample size. In their initial protocol, they aimed to recruit 360 patients according to their power calculation, and they've only recruited 196 in this study. Not all patients underwent the allocated treatment as planned, although they say that the results were borne out in the intention to treat per protocol analysis. And there was gender imbalance, which they've commented on as well. So Gio, if you want to talk about the other limitations we observed.
Yeah, just a few things that we picked up as we were going along. So as mentioned, the inclusion criteria interpretation is left to the local researcher, which means that different surgeons might be assessing similar patients and determining whether they are about to develop symptoms that require surgery, already have symptoms that require surgery, or they're unlikely to develop symptoms that require surgery, which means that some patients might be, the same patient in two different centers might be included or excluded. You would expect minimization to have kind of made this less relevant. However, there are a few patients that were excluded, particularly six, because they ended up requiring emergency surgery in the primary treatment, a primary chemotherapy treatment group, which makes me think that perhaps more attention should have been given to defining who should be included and shouldn't. As we already mentioned, this is not really the original randomized clinical trial we were talking about. This is a preliminary result at 60 days, which was unplanned in the original sort of trial protocol. Of note, in the original trial protocol, there is an interim analysis planned. The original sample size calculations were sort of designed to identify a 6-month difference survival in favor of surgery. The number of patients that they were supposed to recruit was 360 or so. The interim analysis was planned, I believe, at 60% of the death events recorded. So perhaps the trial was stopped, and we don't know. That's something that we probably should ask the authors. we talked about inclusion and exclusion after randomization. I found that a bit confusing because I felt that generally if a patient is randomized to surgery and then they say, I don't want surgery, that means that they're withdrawing consent, at least to me, although it's arguable. And I agree that it's a fine line. But there obviously will be variation between centers, but also variations within the same center in time. Again, minimization should have accounted for that and protected, but I would still count it as a limitation. The sort of fifth point, I'm not entirely sure whether it's a limitation or not, actually. But LDH was used both as an element of the minimization protocol and also as an outcome. Shouldn't really affect you too much, but I'm pondering whether that does have an effect on the analysis. And obviously, I think the big elephant in the room is quality of life that is completely not talked about in this paper. A surrogate of it could be stoma formation rate. Again, having 14 stomas out of about 95 operations, that obviously does affect quality of life, especially for people that do have a very short life expectancy. So ball back to you, Felix, for the conclusions.
So the authors concluded that patients randomized to primary tumor resection followed by systemic treatment experienced higher 60-day mortality than patients randomized to systemic treatment alone. So that was the bottom line that they concluded. And in the table there, you can see some of our positive points and also criticisms of the trial, which we've already been through. So I think that brings the presentation to a close. Welcome any questions or comments.
As usual, a brief summary of the discussion we had about the paper. Now, we reiterated a few points that were already made during the presentation and expanded on them. First of all, we all felt that the most important thing to say about this particular report is that this is not really the Cairo 4 phase 3 randomized clinical trial, but it is a specifically unplanned analysis of arbitrarily picked outcomes, which is somehow considered unusual given that the actual results of the Cairo 4 clinical trial are not out there or available in any shape or form. We also reiterated a point that the authors do mention during their discussion, which is about multiple statistical testing. We discussed multiple statistical testing on episode 19. The authors do say that they decided not to correct for multiple statistical testing. This wouldn't be unacceptable in the context of perhaps a planned analysis, but given that this is completely unplanned and off the original protocol of the Cairo 4 study, we feel that perhaps it would deserve a more thorough discussion in the paper itself. Also, we didn't feel that using LDH both for minimization and for purposes of potential predictor would be a limitation, methodologically speaking. Overall, we felt that the main issue was really the fact that the actual outcome of the trial itself are not available to us or the scientific community for what matters. And the protocol that was published in 2014 becomes almost redundant in the moment you start writing up results based on outcomes that were not originally planned as part of the analysis. And again, this is not necessarily wrong the moment you look back at your trial data and perform a secondary analysis. The results of the original trial should be publicly available or at least mentioned in the paper itself. And we will highlight all of this to the authors and we'll obviously let you know.
Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. Until next time, keep ramming your life with our surgical podcast.